Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Let's start with a set of discussion items for the day. Ellen Dearden, what is on your list for the afternoon?
I sure would like to talk about volatility and how a producer can use volatility to his advantage.
Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting.
Well, I think it'd be interesting to see what everyone's take is on, first of all, an estimate on acreage. It's going to be very interesting, of course. I've got my own ideas there. And then, of course, the over under on the best case scenario for yield this early in the game is a big question. But I think we've certainly taken some of the ball out of our own hands, so to speak.
And Aaron Curtis of Midco.
Well, going along with Matt, I think what our plan acre is going to be, obviously a wide range of guesses. I mean, it's all over the place, right? And I know the weather is obviously going to dictate what that is. I'm curious what the panel thinks on how late the farmer will plant corn if the weather does come around, and at what level December futures need to get to help ensure that the farmer is enticed to continue to make planting corn decisions, and what date that'll be.
Well, let's start with that question. Matt Bennett, you asked this question on Twitter, and you modified the question after you saw the answer. Why don't we start there, and then I have a follow-up for you as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I just kind of want to get an idea, you know, of what everyone's thinking. And so I started out just by asking, where do you think this is going to be? Do you think we're actually going to still have over 91 million acres, which, you know, there was very few people that thought that, less than 1%, and then 7% thought 89 to 91 million, and then it would actually been 92% were 85 or 89 or less. And so I just modified it, and I said, how many of you guys think it's over 87? 6% of people currently think that, 85 to 87, 24%, and you still have 70% that think we're 85 or below. And so that tells me that there's certainly a fair amount of people out there that realize it's a significant situation. So I think, moreover, for me, how many total acres are going to be planted after June 1st whenever you factor in how much replant there's going to be? It's going to be unprecedented and historic, and I certainly think that it's something that is going to come out in the end, what kind of yield you're going to have. Even if you would have ideal weather, it's certainly going to have a major impact on what type of top-end yields we can see this year.
Well, let's start in the Western Corn Belt and see if we can go around the horn here and get an idea of what everybody thinks. I'll let Matt, you go last on this one. But Ellen Dearden, when you just start in the Dakotas, Kansas, Nebraska, the upper part of Minnesota, and say on Saturday they reach their prevent plant date for corn, they've got 20 days. I think that's probably right for them. Everybody, I think, ends up at 20 days. So through the 14th of June to actually go ahead and plant corn. They also have quite likely the lowest APHs in general. Will they plant corn or will they take prevent plant, in your opinion?
I think we will see a lot of prevent plant in that area. We will see Minnesota attempt to plant beans for a longer period of time, but I don't believe we're going to see a whole lot of that being the case in Nebraska even.
Yeah, so Minnesota planting would be through the bottom part of Minnesota would be May 31 along with Iowa this week. And the upper part, of course, is already past. Do you agree with that assessment, Aaron Curtis?
Yeah, I mean, based on some of the customers we talked to out in the Western Corn Belt, I still think that that window is still open to try to plant some corn up until, you know, that 5th or 10th of June. That seems to be a popular number, more like the 10th to the 15th on the Eastern Corn Belt, but more probably the 5th to the 10th somewhere in there on the Western Corn Belt. South Dakota, obviously, is the one that we continue to watch because they're so far behind and continue to have weather struggles. But if you look at the planting progress dates, the planting progress as of Sunday, you can see the Western Corn Belt obviously has had much more luck than the Eastern Corn Belt. So South Dakota is the one to watch here moving forward. But I think if you watch some of the comments on Twitter, I know we have to take those with a grain of salt. Some of those folks in North Dakota kind of hint that they're going to continue to plant corn at the expense of soybeans. So obviously, a lot of verdicts still to be determined, but I still think that that window to plant corn is probably into that first or second week in June, especially if we continue to support these corn prices.
And Matt Bennett, the Western Corn Belt, you can divide the states up however you want.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that in South Dakota, several of those guys, their prevent plant date was, north of, say, Sioux Falls was last Saturday, but then south of Sioux Falls, it still isn't until this Saturday. And so, some of those haven't been necessarily faced with an absolute drop dead date, but there's no question that the southeastern part of the state and the eastern part of South Dakota, there's just a ton of corn production there, and they've gotten no breaks whatsoever with weather. But with that being said, what's a producer going to do whenever they realize if they can get out there and get some corn in the ground, even if they lose 5% off their guarantee, 452 December corn changes a person's mindset pretty quickly. So I think that there's going to be a significant amount of prevent plant acres scattered throughout the country. I still think that we've got a little bit of time before producers make the decision to abandon, because I think that when you work some of the math, and I hate to put it this way, but, farming for insurance for most folks is probably going to beat prevent plant, especially in areas where it won't really be a very good option to try to plant soybeans late in the game.
And does that differ if you're in, for instance, Ohio, which was severely behind, Indiana, way behind, Illinois is way behind, but those two states are just really behind in their corn planting?
I think the farther south you get, where you can wait the 25 days, depending on your insurance policy, but that's what my guy has relayed to me. If I decide on the 5th that I'm not going to plant corn, and then, late in the month, go ahead and plant soybeans. A lot of guys have had wheat stubble beans, that have made 50 and 60 bushel the last couple of years. So, I'm not so sure that a guy needs to scoff at that. And so it's probably an opportunity where you have double crop people, that typically get along okay with beans like that. So, it does make a difference. And it definitely depends on how far south you are as well.
Yeah, so just for clarification point, after you get to the prevent plant date, and those dates were June or May 25, May 31, June 5 in general, and June 5 would be Illinois, most of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. You've got 20 days after those dates plus 72 hours in order to make notice to both the FSA office and your insurance agent. And Gary Schnitke's written about that. It's up on the website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, and you can find it there on our website at willag.org. So that's my next question, because you went to beans rather than corn planting in both sides of the belt. So we're thinking now, what do we do in the Dakotas, North Dakota in particular? Do they go beans? And if you're in Indiana, Ohio, do you go beans at this point? And your inclination sounded, Matt, like that was what you were thinking. Is that right? And then, Ellen, can you pick up from there?
Essentially, what I'm saying is if you're approaching your date, and agronomically, you don't feel good whatsoever about putting corn in the ground, which, quite frankly, you have to talk to several producers that feel like they're super proud of everything they've done this spring. But if you're still really wet here on, say, June 10th or June 15th, what I'm saying is if you're in an area in the Eastern Corn Belt or farther south where you feel confident you can plant beans late in the game and still get a reasonable yield, absolutely, I think that it can make sense. But, yeah, I think whenever you're in the Dakotas, A lot of those folks have said for quite some time they really didn't want to plant soybeans in the first place. And so are they going to stick with corn? I think they will. But we also can't discount the fact that soybeans have rallied significantly as well here in the last week or so.
Well, soybeans have rallied, but their base is still, you know, is terrible in North Dakota. So I think that's why they have basically given up the idea of trying to plant beans.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the balance sheet definitely does not need any more soybeans. And I think basis is a deciding factor, especially up in those Dakotas. And with that PNW market really disappearing for a large part of the year and slipping back here again now with the, you know, obviously China business continues to be pretty slim and really no good solid prognosis on when that may return. So I think that's got producers, or it should have some producers, concerned about where they end up with beans here moving forward, not only what it means to price, but what it means to basis up there, and expect bean basis continue to be on the weak side as long as we continue to keep China out of the U.S. soybean export market.
How many acres, Aaron, of prevent plant, or how many acres of corn do you think will be planted this year?
On our low side right now, we are using 87 million.
And where does that put you in total for production?
That puts us 80 harvested acres and production at 13.4.
With what kind of yield?
Using a 168 yield.
A 168 yield. And Ellen, do you have an S&D table too?
I'm not really doing that right now, but I think that 87 may be on the high side of the corn acres that get planted. And keep in mind that when we look for this end of June report that shows acreage, it's going to be so all over the place, because USDA's question to producers is, what do you plant, what have you planted, or what do you intend to plant? And so that's a pretty wide open question with as late as planting has been. I think the bigger question may be, how many prevent plant acres do we have on beans?
And are you expecting that number to be large at this point?
I think we will have several million prevent plant acres in beans. So I think our total number of acres is going to be down considerably. And I don't know if it'll be down 10 million, but it will be down. We will lose bean acres to prevent plant.
And when you said 10, you're talking about combined.
Yes, I am, certainly.
How about you, Matt?
Currently, my team at Ag Market, we're using, you know, about a 6.2 or so, 6.2 to 6.5 million acre loss on corn acres. You know, if I plug like 86.3 into our table, you know, my personal opinion is that you're probably looking at more like, you know, a 165 would be my over-under at this stage of the game. And so, you know, that tells me obviously a significant amount of demand is going to have to be rationed. I don't think that you can get close to a 1 billion carryout simply because we're going to ration so much demand. But certainly it's going to be significantly tighter than a person ever thought that we would be looking at, you know, just a month ago.
It seems to me that all of the numbers that we have just heard, so we've been in that 5, 6, 7 million acre, well, somewhere in that range, might be reflective of where the market is today. Is that safe to say?
Well, I guess in my opinion, Todd, we're initially trying to get a handle on what kind of acreage loss we might see due to weather. I think that was kind of the first wave of buying. There's a lot of folks that are kind of coming to the realization, though, maybe even this week, you know, that the yield loss could be quite a bit more than anybody was ready to necessarily understand. And so I think as you go through here, you know, the market could be very well supported. I mean, I think everybody knows that we were hitting up on significant resistance there on December corn, you know, up around the 454 area. We've had a hard time busting through that. I haven't been able to here in the last 5 years. But what's it going to take to bust through? And I think what it's going to take is the realization that a combination of acreage and yield loss is a heck of a lot bigger than anybody ever dreamed it might be.
Well, let's turn our attention then to what to do about marketing old and new crop, because they might get blurred at this point a little bit, and we'll take volatility up, Ellen, with you in this process. Let's start actually with that volatility level and how producers might be able to take advantage of it.
Okay, the first thing I'll point out is everybody who wants to use options for protection, that when we have high volatility, typically we have prices, strike price at the money type situation, that we see the premium paid as being very significant. So my gut feeling is always when we have high volatility to sell options. Do I want to sell calls above the market? Not at this stage of the game. Do I want to sell puts below the market? I think there's a plan to do that. Now, that requires that you know that you are open for margin calls at some point in time. I am not interested in using futures contracts as far as selling futures at this stage of the game. I would like to stay very open, which means I really don't want to use hedge to arrive contracts, but that will be probably a more even way to look at this market. I think I've already had what I consider the shaky voice calls this week with people really spooked with the market action, with a high volatility, and those people really are not good candidates for playing in the futures market, and that's what they think they want to play. This is not a player's game, from my opinion.
Aaron Curtis, what have you been telling the folks that are calling in? I suspect they call you about both old and new crop.
Yeah, exactly right. And we don't have to go back very far, right? I mean, I'm talking like 3 weeks ago, where we had a six-week period or more where we had no volatility and every day was down, right? And here we finally got some rally, and we got to be careful, right, being not seeing the forest and the trees, right? But I think from an old crop standpoint, with still some sizable chunks in some areas of old crop corn left to sell, and old crop is being used a little bit of it as an insurance policy against the fact that we can't get planted, and I understand that. But I think we got to be still in a scale-up approach here on old crop corn as we continue, if we continue to move this market up, to continue to reward the market. Because, you know, if I told you a month ago you could have got 415 or 420 cash corn, I mean, you would have taken that all day long. So here we are in some instances. So I think we got to continue to reward the market on the scale-up approach. New crop, I think, is the tougher question. Todd, especially if you're setting in areas where haven't planted any corn. And I'll tell you, around the country, right, the conversation is about buying back contracts has increased. So there's a lot of those conversations going on in some parts of the Corn Belt where they haven't had any corn planted. So I think that's the tougher question here on, you know, how aggressive do you get on selling some of this a new crop. And I guess I don't have a good answer for you. I hate to bail on you like that, Todd, but I don't know. I think at least on a small portion of it, you got to use some sound risk management practices and continue to have a scale-up approach. But I think you got to be a little careful, particularly if you're in an area that just hasn't gotten much work done.
Well, let me ask it a different way, because did you buy much new crop corn the first 3 days of the week?
It has really slowed down. We went through a pretty good buying, I would say, a week ago, right? But over the last 3 days and even late last week, it's really slowed down. Now, there's still some stuff moving, more Western Corn Belt-wise, I would say, than Eastern Corn Belt. In the areas that have had some more progress planted, they're obviously much more comfortable on selling some new crop. But it has slowed down here as we continue to get these rains, and this forecast today, you know, looks even wetter now for next week. So it's quieted down quite a bit. Overall, we still have a very small percentage of new crop sales on the books, because we started this rally with basically zero being bought, right? The farmer just had not sold anything new crop-wise going into this rally. So that's increased from there, but the producer overall has gotten much more conservative now that this market is rallied up and we continue to see the rains coming.
I want to follow up, because it would have been Friday Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the day we're recording here, there were certainly $4 cash bids. You're saying that you bought before that, and then after that, you didn't buy? It just surprises me that's the case. I thought that $3.94 cash bid would be where farmers would be aimed at to begin with for their sales.
Yeah, I think that was what we call that. A lot of that easy, those easy bushels have been bought now, Todd. And I would say over the last 2 or 3 days, it's become much more conservative in terms of guys wanting to sell additional bushels. Now there is still stuff getting priced, but it's not at the level that we saw in terms of percentage wise. It's not the level that we saw a week ago.
Matt Bennett, what do we do with new crop?
Well, yeah, I agree with a lot of what these guys are saying. I think if I'm in an area that I don't have any corn planted or I don't feel good about production whatsoever, then certainly we don't need to be looking at, a true hedge selling December corn, because the way that works is you make margin calls, the value of your cash corn goes up. But if you don't have cash corn to sell at the end of the game, that's a bad place to be. And so, do you sell to the elevator? It's the same type of thing. Pretty tough to sell to the elevator if you're not totally sure what your production looks like. And I do understand volatility is up there for a fair amount. But, it's not a bad idea to maybe place a put option here and there or to even do like a put spread, because as Ellen's saying, selling a put maybe is a little less risky at this point than selling a call, because certainly it sounds good. Hey, I'm going to sell some 520s or 530s. But at the same time, you got to understand that if the market rallies sharply, sometimes having short options can be a helpless feeling, and it's pretty tough to get out of those at times. So, what does a producer do? I think that you got to set a floor in place if you're in that situation as far as production goes. But if you've got corn up and it looks fairly good, and you've been saying all along that you would give anything to sell at 420, 430, 440, well, we're sitting here at 452 as we closed here on Thursday. So to me, you have to reward the market at some point. I always say a rally is not a rally unless someone's selling something, because, while we all think this thing is could really get exciting and keep going significantly farther, the market doesn't have to do anything. As a producer, our job is to try to take risk off the table and at least manage some of that. So I certainly want to be in a scale-up selling mode if I feel good about my production. But at the same time, I will say earlier in the year, I know that we've talked about this previously, we bought calls hoping for some sort of a rally like this. And I know a lot of producers have kind of gotten into this strategy over the last few years. They call it courage calls, call it what you want. But if you're in a situation where you bought calls for that specific reason to make you feel better about selling corn on the way up, then by golly, use the calls for what they're for and sell some corn on the way up. Because if you still own in the calls, you're going to be able to participate in an additional rally.
So, Ellen, I want to follow up on that. I think I saw someplace a couple of times people talking about playing defense when it drops back down. I wonder what you thought about that strategy as opposed to trying to sell into the rally.
I don't know. I just think I think like Matt says, you have to have some kind of a plan of something to do. And from my perspective, it may be easier to feel comfortable about selling beans rather than corn. I think everybody's on the corn's going to lead everything out of this market lower. And so maybe the strategy is to focus on beans and doing some selling of beans, have offers in on beans, because by golly, everybody wanted to sell $4, $4.50 December corn futures, but nobody wanted to sell $9 beans. They wanted to sell $9.50 or $10.50 beans.
So you're just of the idea that I'm going to be able to plant beans.
Yes.
Period, roughly speaking. I think most farmers have that idea, right?
Yeah, and I think so too. And we've seen this bean market find awfully good support from the meal side of things, but the bean oil has certainly not been able to go along. So that's a little caution for me.
Matt wanted to know what the over-under, and I like the way you put that, Matt. What's the over-under on yield at this point? What do you think, Ellen? What's the over-under on yield? And you can maybe do both corn and soybeans if you want. I don't know.
I would agree with Aaron. At this stage of the game, you have to be looking at somewhere around 168. Maybe that's the high side of things. I'm losing bushels every day. But I think from a bean yield, we may be looking at something quite a bit lower than anybody thinks. You know, beans just don't like those wet feet, and they don't like staying with wet feet. So if USDA was at 49.5, I think we got maybe my starting point has to be around 46.
How about you, Aaron?
168 would be my over-under on corn. 47 would be my over-under on beans.
And Matt?
Yeah, like I said, I'm probably around 165 because I feel like, you know, while a 168 might be accomplishable, boy, that would take a heck of a good weather pattern, in my opinion. As far as soybeans go, we got to remember that the huge yields of the last 3 years have been heavily attributed to early planting dates. And so we're getting a late start. To me, you know, that 46, 47 is maybe a little idealistic yet. So I'm going to say 46 for now, but I think with every passing day, kind of like these guys are saying, I'm losing some confidence in what these yields might be able to do.
And finally, before I let y'all go and before we get our final words, talk to me about the prevent plant decision and what your thought process might be or what farmers have been telling you. I think, Aaron, I'll start with you, move to Ellen, and then let Matt wrap up on that one.
That's a good question. I, you know, not necessarily at the farmer level like Ellen and Matt would be, but I think the question is, you know, is there going to be enough of a window here between now and June 10th to be able to get out and get some of this corn planted? I agree with what Matt kind of hinted at earlier, right, is the I think the producer, in most cases, right, wants to plant grain. So I think that's still on their mind at this point. I still think they would want to get out there and plant something, especially when you're looking at areas from Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, which just don't have a lot of experience or have much need in the past for prevent plants. So I think this window is going to be critical between now and June 10th. But as far as getting into the actual math on kind of what December corn needs to be versus prevent plant, I guess I'll leave that to Ellen and Matt.
Well, and I think the only way you can evaluate that is to go to the Farm Doc site and use their spreadsheet on prevent plant. I mean, that's the most sensible place to start, I think. But I you know, this weather looks so uncertain for next week, and so, you know, we don't have these dry periods. We have less rain maybe than we've been having heavy rains. You know, that's still not going to let a lot of guys back in the field or in the field for the first go round.
You know, I think as far as prevent plant goes, a producer's going to plant corn if they can in most cases. But, you know, as we've talked about previously, last fall was a terrible fall for most people. And so if you're a producer who didn't get your anhydrous on last fall, you don't have any chemical on, you know, to me, it's a little bit easier to maybe go ahead and make the decision not to plant because you don't have anything wrapped up in this crop that you can't recuperate. And so that certainly has to be factored in, that might artificially make some folks be a little more inclined for prevent plant. But again, as I said, I think the guys want to plant if they can, especially guys and gals, you know, want to plant whenever corn's 450 and above. I mean, that's just an awfully attractive thing. We haven't seen that for a few years. It's created a lot of excitement. But at the same time, just to continue to talk circles around this, Jiminy Christmas, you got to have decent conditions. And it's just been taxing on the producer. It's been stressful and frustrating, you know, to try to get conditions to be even decent. And so if you can't go into decent conditions, that certainly is going to impact your decision as well.
So if you want to find that Farm Doc Daily Decision Tool, and it's an Excel spreadsheet that you'll be able to download, you can visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Farm Doc Daily is all one word, and it is Doc, D-O-C. You're going to look for the article that Gary Schnitke, Carl Zuloff, Krista Swanson, and Ryan Vance, along with Jonathan Kappas, have authored It probably will not be at the top of the page. In fact, I know it won't, because they put one up there, a new one up every day. It's called Prevented Planting 2019 Market Facilitation Program Payments, Disaster Assistance, and Price Dynamics. And within that article, you will find the link. I'll also try to remember to put a link directly on our website at willag.org to the FarmDoc Daily Decision Tool as it relates to prevented planting. Now let's get a final word from each of you. I think, Ellen Dearden, let's start with you today.
I think we have seen a major change in attitude. How long will that last is a big question. But I want to keep in mind that last time we had a big drought, it was really during a surging demand period of time, and we are in a contracting demand situation right now.
Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, AgMarket.net.
Yeah, I think we've got to keep our discipline, and you got to stay flexible here. Realize that this market is extremely volatile. As Ellen said earlier, I don't think we need to be playing anything. We need to be hedging risk. And managing as much of it as we can. But again, we've got to keep our flexibility. Understand there's a whole host of things that can happen moving forward.
And Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Well, Todd, I would say we prefer volatility to markets that are pretty dead, which is what we saw the previous 6 weeks after, or previous 6 weeks before this last couple weeks. But probably these next 15 days of June are going to be, you know, some of the most critical we've seen in the markets, and it seems like a few years, right? Whether or not we get in the field here and continue to plant the remaining, how much of that remaining 40 million acres of corn we are able to plant. We got a June 11th crop report in there. So Wednesday of this week should have been a little bit of a warning sign that you got to be cautious. Any change in the forecast, this thing's going to rock it around a little bit. So continue to have goals, continue to have a marketing plan here moving forward, and make sure you're setting those targets if we continue to move up here.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You might find and listen to our program in its entirety on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden of Ag Review, out of Morton, Illinois, Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.